I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds podcast. This is going to be episode number 238.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a Hugo Award-winning podcaster for the SF Signal podcast. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I am a musician and a podcaster. You can check out my website, johnanilio.com, and you can check out our website, functionalnerds.com as well. And you can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. And today we are joined by Peter Arulian. Peter Arulian is a novelist of the fantasy novels The Unremembered and the new one, Trial of Intentions, which is just out now.
Could you face the microphone? Come on.
I'm sorry. I have the books down here on the floor, and I was just like, Peter is also a vocalist. He's a trained vocalist and involved in a lot of different progressive rock and metal projects over the years. And he also works for Xbox for Microsoft. So he's a man of many talents. So, Peter, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
And John, just so you understand, when I do interrupt you like that, it's never my intention to put you through a bunch of trials.
Nice. Is that the first pun you've heard made for your new book, Peter?
No, but maybe the best.
Wow, Patrick, someone said you had a good pun there.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
That may be a first.
It's very
for
funny.
You. Yeah. So, Peter, how is the book launch been? Is the book actually officially out now?
It is. It came out on May 26th.
Oh, okay. So it's been out for a couple. I never know some of the release dates because sometimes I get this stuff like months ahead of time, and sometimes I want to talk about this stuff, and I'm like, maybe I should wait. So how has the book launch been going so far?
Been going good. Tor sent me on a book tour, which was a lot of fun. Exhausting, but fun.
They specifically left Denver off the list, John. I was very upset.
Hmm. Yeah. So where did you tour, Peter? Obviously not Denver, but where else were you?
A lot of the West Coast, up and down the West Coast, and obviously Washington, Oregon, California. And then they sent me into Utah because I'm originally from there and did a bunch of bookstores over there.
It was cool, John, because if you follow Peter on social media, he was doing that thing where it's like, hey, if you're in such and such airport and you go to the bookstore, here's my book and I may have signed it. You can go find it. It was kind of cool.
I love that. It's like sort of an international scavenger hunt.
It is. It's awesome. I actually love when authors do that. So I was very excited to see Peter doing that.
Cool. All right. Well,
yeah, that was fun.
Oh, cool. Well, lots to get into with Peter, but let's get on to our picks of the week first.
Picks of the week.
And Peter, why don't you tell us your pick this week? I know you have a couple.
Yeah, well, I've been listening a lot to the new Camelot album, Haven, which is, I think, fantastic. And just yesterday I was out doing some yard work and I got to a song called Under Gray Skies that I put on repeat. I love so much. So people should check that out. It's in the sort of progressive metal, power metal area, but there's a lot of really great composition in there with a lot of string arrangements and stuff. It's really good.
Mm. And that is Camelot with a K for our listeners. So if you go searching for it online, spell Camelot with a K and you will find that. I'm going to pick something music related too. And it's interesting because I'm picking it because I'm enjoying it, but there's a lot of interesting things going on in sort of the digital music world recently. And so my pick is actually going to be Spotify did a recent update of their app, and they have this feature called Spotify Now, which has all these kind of curated playlists on it. And they're very good. I was very surprised. You know, they have like lots of little, you know, electronic writing music and electronic study music and calming this and acoustic covers and heavy metal covers. There's one great playlist that someone put together of all metal versions of different pop songs by like a lot of artists that I never heard of before. So the playlists are very good. And I've really been enjoying that sort of update to Spotify. Now, that being said, you guys are pretty interested in the tech world. And one of the things that I'm kind of excited about, and I was kind of would be interested to hear your guys' take on it, is Apple's announcement of a streaming music service. I, for one, am very interested to see what they do with it. I've sort of wanted them to have something like that for a long time, and it's been in the works for a long time for them, and it's coming out June 30th, and I'm certainly going to try it at least. I think they're going to be doing a 3-month trial with it. Peter, what are your thoughts on the Apple Music streaming service that is forthcoming?
I think it's real powerful. I mean, it's the devil's in the execution on that, but they clearly have the most significant download to own store with iTunes. So if they couple that with a really great subscription service, I don't know the details on their streaming. So I don't know if they'll have both a free and paid. The triple play that is awesome is a service that's got a download to own store, basically a radio type of thing with where you can do seed channels like Pandora, and then a bona fide subscription service where you pay the monthly fee and you get unlimited streaming. I don't know if they're doing both of the latter two things. If they do, it's going to be really hard to compete with them.
I believe they are. I've actually done a lot of research on it because what my dream has been would be to have a Spotify-like subscription service that has a huge catalog, but also be able to integrate the music that I own. If you're a longtime music fan and you had 1,000 CDs or more like I did, you have them all ripped to your iTunes catalog. And as large as Spotify's catalog is, there's just a lot of stuff that's not on it. You know, it's
AC/DC.
Yeah. And, you know, you want to put these playlists together and then you're like, they don't have Def Leppard. So I can't.
Actually, they do, but they only have live Def Leppard.
Yeah, they don't have like the
classic
studio albums. Yep. Yeah. So it's like, oh, that's a bummer. Or, you know, the one that I always point to, even though, but I imagine a lot of people, if you're a huge music fan, this is the type of thing that, you know, is what's lacking in a streaming service is, Peter, I don't know if you're familiar with it. You may be. There is a label. It was called Shrapnel Records. And Shrapnel Records was the guitar shredder label of the 80s and 90s. So there are Yngwie Malmsteen had a couple albums on there, but it was also Marty Friedman and Jason Becker and Tony McAlpine. Yeah, James Byrd. Oh, yes. You actually, well, you were, now was Byrd in Fifth Angel when you sang with them still at the time?
No, he was not.
Right. So Fifth Angel was on Shrapnel early on and all of these great, and I had all those albums on cassette. So I bought all those albums back in the day and I never had any of them on CD. I was still buying stuff on cassette at the time. And for a long time, that stuff wasn't even on iTunes. Like, so Mike Varney, who's the owner of Shrapnel Records, I think just doesn't really want to deal with digital, and none of it is on Spotify either. And so I've bought a couple of those CDs and I've bought a couple of those albums on iTunes because I'm like, I bought these albums already. I don't want to buy them again. But so I have catalogs like that. And a lot of the progressive rock that I like, a lot of that's not on Spotify too. Some stuff like Spock's Beard, like the old Spock's Beard stuff when Neil would like, that's not on Spotify. So there's a lot of stuff that's just not on it. So from what I understand, that is what this new service is going to be. There's going to be your catalog that you upload and whatever is sort of double, they just sort of take that. I think it's sort of like how iTunes Match was, which I never used. And yeah, then they have a streaming service, which I, from what it looks like, is going to be a very large catalog similar to Spotify's. And you can combine the two and we'll see how it integrates. But I think it's a 3-month trial and I'm certainly going to try it for that 3 months. Patrick, what about you? What are your thoughts?
Well, you're right that they have a larger catalog by mm-hmm. far. Spotify does tend to annoy me when I can't find certain things. However, I did want to point out that Spotify's their single greatest curated playlist is Dean's Supernatural playlist. And it's every song that Dean has ever listened to in his baby on Supernatural. Okay. And it's every song that's ever been on the show. So that is by far. Now, however, the AC/DC stuff is all a cover band because there is no AC/DC on Spotify. So that kind of sucks. And there is there's no Traveling Wilburys in Spotify, which also sucks. There's very limited kind of stuff there. I've noticed that, and Susan Tedeschi and Tedeschi Trucks Band, Mm-hmm. The only stuff of theirs that's on Spotify is live album stuff. Again, mm-hmm. so there's something where they can't get the studio albums for some reason, but they get a couple of the live performances. Anyway, Derek Trucks, awesome guitarist. If you guys don't love him already, you should. Mm-hmm. You made me flash back to being 12 years old and buying a 6-pack of cassettes. Mm. And taking them over to somebody's house. And at that time, there was no way, or this person didn't have a way to dub vinyl to cassette. So I sat on the floor with my little, tiny little boombox and my cassettes, and I would play albums and record them on my little cassette player so I could take them home and have these really shitty dubs of these albums that I loved. So you totally made me flash back to that when you said cassettes. Anyway, I think it could be good because they do have a larger catalog. However, there's always that fight between Apple and the music publishers and the recording labels, and who knows what this is going to be. You know, it could start off as something really cool, and then as soon as everybody signs up, all the music labels go, "Well, we're not getting enough money." So you have to charge more.
Yeah, I think from what I understand, because I did look a lot into this in the past week since it's been announced. So I don't think there is going to be a free version, Peter. Like, there's a radio that you can listen to for free. But in terms of the streaming service, there is no free plan. You have to do the $10 a month plan.
Well, and do you know that there used to be, I don't think it's easily accessible in iTunes anymore. But there used to be, if you clicked, there was a radio, an actual radio, and it would stream radio stations from across the world who were part of this program. And that's how I used to listen to a lot of radio from the UK and Eastern Europe and stuff through iTunes in the early, like, 2001, 2002, 2003. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if they still have that anymore. I don't think they do.
No, I don't think they have that, but I know they're launching like 3 stations to start. That'll just be 24 hours of DJ playing music. And I think it's going to be very lowest common denominator. So, but that's kind of an exciting thing too, because I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I go to listen to music and I'm like, ooh, what should I listen to? I don't know. And I'll sit there for like 20 minutes. Am I in the mood for this? No, I'm in the mood. And so it would be kind of nice to just have a DJ once in a while, like, you know, and have them for all different genres. Like, what if there was a progressive metal station that had round-the-clock DJs playing just progressive metal, and you knew you're in the mood for that, but maybe not exactly what you wanted to? That would be great. Or just to be turned on to new stuff and have a DJ, you know, that's what's kind of missing with radio is that, you know, it used to be where you would listen to radio stations, and if you liked a DJ and liked what they did, like, you'd find out about cool new music. And that's not really the way radio has been in a long time.
But, well, no, it's because
that's what I was. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is the real value to me of Spotify is music discovery. It does a really good job of that. And even Pandora, like, I put it on a radio seed, I'll come across, you know, music from artists that I'm not familiar with. That's what I don't know how well Apple will execute with this. The labels will be nervous. I've worked with the record labels before. If Apple creates a vertical stack here with all of the sort of music consumption models, and consumers can kind of buy into a whole ecosystem there with, here's where I'm going to buy my stuff, where I'm going to get match in the cloud, I can do all of my great music discovery the way I have done with Spotify and the radio CDs they've created with things like Pandora. The gap will be a consumer who spent a ton of time building their own radio CDs and their own playlists with Spotify and these others. Usually these competitors don't allow them to import those.
Right.
Yeah. And so they've got a big investment over here. The outfit that decides or figures out how a consumer can migrate all of their investment in curation and also have a good discovery model, they're going to win, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because that's the thing now. Is like, I've been using Spotify for 2 or 3 years now, and I have all these playlists like and all this stuff. And it's like, well, maybe I'll go back to iTunes, because I put a lot of time into iTunes for quite a few years there too. And now it's coming back. But it will be worth it. If it'll do what I want it to do. And I realize I'm sort of an edge case for wanting to, you know, have my smart playlists and all that kind of stuff. But if it works, it'll be cool. And you know, to answer your question, Patrick, about the labels and everything, Apple wanted to do a free service. They wanted to have more tiered pricing. They wanted to have like a $5 a month one. And the labels, I don't think the labels didn't back down. They're like, no, it's got to be at least $10. You can't do a free one.
Yep, so it's shit like that is why we have a debut author with a $20 ebook.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's another whole conversation as well. Well, let's.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud?
Yeah. all right. So Patrick, I don't think you actually picked anything yet.
No, I haven't had a pick yet. So yeah, last week I talked about the Fate game system. So this week my pick is actually a role playing game that uses the Fate game system, which is called The Dresden Files.
Hmm.
And you may have heard of this. It's there's like some books out there. It's set in the universe created by Jim Butcher and his Harry Dresden books, The Dresden Files. And so it lets you take on a character set in that world, but you don't necessarily have to be in Chicago. You know, you can be anywhere in the world, but you're still in the Dresden universe. And it gives you a lot of stuff to play with, a lot of different kinds of characters and different types of you know, powers and all that kind of good stuff. And it does use the Fate core system, so that made it really easy for me. Again, I got to play this a few weeks ago, and it made it really easy for me just to sit down and start playing. And one of the aspects that I liked, and I wasn't 100% sure, I think this is part more of Fate than it is of the Dresden Files role-playing game, is your character creation is not you sitting there with a sheet of paper trying to figure everything out. You start it, and then you pass it to the person to the left, and the two of you work together to bring your two characters together and kind of make a story where they are, you know, instead of like everybody meets in a tavern, you build a backstory between you and the character to your left, and then they pass it back to you, and then you pass it to the person on your right, and the two of you work on the next section, and each section impacts your character in some way and becomes part of who they are and what they are. So it was just a really neat thing. And if you're a fan of the books, it made it so simple to get into this game system and just start playing and having fun with it. So Dresden Files role-playing game, that's my pick this week.
Hey, can I have one more?
Yes.
Sure, do it.
I'll make it quick. But when you tag me to think about this, a film I saw recently is a film called Inside Llewyn Davis. It's about a New York folk singer-songwriter. And it's got Oscar Isaac, who's one of my favorite new actors. And when people should watch this film, it's really good. And there's this scene where he goes to Chicago to audition for a club there, and a club owner played by F. Murray Abraham. And he sings this song called Queen Jane, and he sings it alone in the middle of this empty bar to Abraham. And it's stunningly performed. And I won't give it away, but when he's finished singing, the line that Abraham delivers back to him is sort of like soul crushing. It's a really great film. You need to see it.
Yeah, that's one that was on my radar. Is that who's the director of that? Do you know?
No,
I feel like
I don't.
I feel like it's like those the brothers,
Coen brothers.
Coen brothers. Coen. Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought is Justin Timberlake in that too?
He is. Yeah, but it's okay.
Yeah, no, I like Justin Timberlake as an actor. I do. I
think he's an actor. He's great.
He was in Trouble with the Curve. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that the Clint Eastwood film?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, he's a good actor.
He was great in that movie. I liked that.
He was, actually.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my I encourage people to see that. It's a good movie.
I will check it out. That sounds great. Okay, so Peter, you know, one of the first thing that I wanted to ask you, you know, obviously we've known you for a while, and when your first book came out, The Unremembered, we had you on the show a few years ago, and you know, just recently, sort of before Trial of Intentions came out, The Unremembered was re-released as the author's definitive edition, which I have right here. So maybe you could tell our listeners something about this edition of the book. How is this different than the version that came out a few years ago?
Well, let me give you the cliff notes on sort of the backstory. I think I've said this before in other places, but not all author-editor pairings are matches made in heaven. And that's nobody's fault. Like, it's like any kind of relationship. And that's what happened to me. And so there was a lot of sort of editorial misfires and when I finally moved to a new editor, which was a gracious sort of opportunity that Tor afforded me, I got talking to that new editor about, you know, some of the genesis of the original version of The Unremembered. And the team there, including the sales leads for channel groups like Barnes & Noble and Amazon, came up with this notion that I had kind of, you know, pushed by them, which is, why don't we do what I originally intended with the novel, which was what became the author's edition. And I mean, different from a lot of author's editions, what's actually with this book, it's actually significantly shorter than the original. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, like with Stephen King's The Stand, you get the uncut version and it adds 300 pages. This actually subtracts 300 pages or more. It's a significant amount is pulled out. And then because I had the opportunity, I did a few things to tie it more closely to the second book. But, you know, I sharpened up dialogue. I warmed up some characters. I made more clear some of the motivations. I did some of that kind of work. But largely it was like really tightening where and doing some things with my vision for how I wanted to tell the story that I had wanted to do. And just because of sort of editorial relationship wasn't allowed to do. And so now the how I had intended for it to come out is out. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're holding right now.
Awesome. You know, and let me ask you, you know, so.
And John, before you do that, just to throw it out there for folks, Peter did tell a little longer version of this story over on the SF Signal podcast that I did with him. So if you want to hear a little bit more, go check that out.
Yes, I was going to say that too. And, you know, so let me ask you this. So what I've been doing lately, as listeners of the show know, and as I've mentioned to Patrick, I've been reading a lot more lately. And one of the ways that I've been reading more is that I'm reading paper books, I'm reading ebooks, I'm listening to audiobooks. Sometimes I got two or three different books going at the same time. What I did just recently, and I think this is one of the reasons why publishers and publicists are so generous with giving out ARCs and finished copies to podcasters and book reviewers, is because they know we probably spend more money on books than everybody else anyway. So even though they're like giving it up, they know. So what I've recently I picked it on last week's show is Brian Stavely's new book, which I just finished, Providence of Fire, which is excellent. I had the book here and I was like, oh, that's like 600 and something pages. Like, that's going to take a long time. You know, let me buy the, and I looked in the ebook and they had the audiobook too. So I actually was able to knock this out pretty quickly because I was doing all three at the same time. Like, I would read the paper book when I'd be eating my breakfast, and then I'd listen to the audiobook on the ride to the gym, and then I'd read it on an ebook when I was at the gym, and then I'd listen more. So I was looking for Trial of Intentions. I couldn't find the audiobook on Amazon. Is that going to have an audiobook eventually, Peter?
It's my understanding that the audiobook is out.
Okay.
I, you know, to be honest, I'm not one of those guys who it refreshes my Amazon page all day. I'm not suggesting other writers do that. I'm simply
no, they do. They totally do it.
And by the way, that's not any sort of statement of egotism. It's just physics for me. I'm still working a day job. I've got two little kids. I'm a musician like you, and that's important for me to spend time doing. So I don't track as well as maybe even I should all the stuff that is me that's out on the internet.
It is. It is available on Audible, John.
Oh, okay. Cause what I wanted to do the same thing with Peter's new book is because it is a long book as well. And rather than, cause you know, if I just read the paper book, it'll probably take me a month to get through it. And I'm kind of enjoying my faster reading pace. So I wanted to go, even though Tor was gracious enough to send me the hardcover, I'd like to go and buy the audiobook and the ebook so I can keep doing that as well. So I'll have to check. It is
all updated now on Amazon. So it's got the ebook, hardcover, and Audible.
Maybe when I checked, it wasn't there yet. Yeah. So I will do that. So my question then is when I looked up that stuff, I noticed there was a lot of other Vault of Heaven material. And I noticed that The Unremembered was, you know, the Vault of Heaven book one. And then Trial of Intentions was like sort of listed as like book six or something. Like, can you explain that? Because that I was a little confused about.
I'm trying to unwind that a little bit. What it is, there's a story volume, which is six or eight short stories set in the universe of the Vault of Heaven, which is my series, that have been collected into a story volume. And, you know, some of them are like origin stories for some of the characters. Some are historical events. They're not necessary to have read the novels and enjoy those, but they add some richness to that experience if you do so. or can become, you can come to that after the novels if you want to kind of double click on certain things. When you, when those things get listed on Amazon, what happens is you let them know if it's part of a series, and then they sort of append a number. So depending on like when those things happen, it gives you this strange number. I'm trying to figure out a way to correct that so that readers aren't confused, because Trial of Intentions is the second book in the series. There's also a novella I put out called The Sound of Broken Absolutes. It was the story, the novella I wrote for the Unfettered anthology, but now that's separate and a standalone, so people can go and get that. And so that's why the numbers are crazy. But while you put me in mind of something I want to be sure and say, which is I wrote, because of the delta between Unremembered and when Trial of Intentions released, because of all the editorial stuff, I wrote Trial of Intentions as an entry point to the series. So if anybody listening to this has never read anything by me, Trial of Intentions is a good place to start.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to ask that because I did read the original version of The Unremembered a few years ago. And I was, you know, before launching into Trial of Intentions, one of the things I was like, well, should I reread it? Should I read the new? Now, is the, would you say the author's edition of Unremembered now, did you put that together after Trial of Intentions or before?
Yeah, it's interesting because I had turned in Trial of Intentions, and that's when some of this other stuff kind of came together. And so then I went back and that's when I was given the opportunity to share what my vision was for the Unremembered originally. And when I shared all of those notes with my editor, she said, yeah, you should go and do that. So that's why it gave me the opportunity to introduce about 15,000 words into the book that ties it to Trial of Intentions, even though I cut over, you know, over 100,000 words. So it's what I tell readers is, if you read the original, I'm not trying to gouge you to go and get the definitive edition. It's not necessary. In fact, like I said before, if you've not read anything, Trial of Intentions is a fine place to start. If you're a completionist and you want to begin at the beginning and you really want to read The Unremembered, I do recommend you read the author's edition because I think it's stronger.
Mm, cool. So, you know, let me ask you another question. So as it relates to your music side, I know you've mentioned on other podcasts that you are working on an album that's based on the stories in the books. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how much of the story or what part of the story is going to be told in the music and how that's going.
Yeah, it's so how it's going, I'll go with first, which is it's been hard with the day job, and my collaborator also works at Microsoft. So our schedules are challenging. I would say 80% of the music is written, and I've written lyrics for and lyrics and melodies for and harmonies for the first two, and harmonies for the two after that. And there'll be 11 songs on it. It's kind of in, it's some kind of mix between Dream Theater and Queensryche, with some songs that have a little bit of Disturbed in them. Some songs that are much, much softer, almost singer-songwriter-y tunes. And the reason for that is because it tells the story. In the books, there's this song of power called the Song of Suffering. And there's a character who's kind of steward over teaching those who have the magical ability to sing this song, you know, how to use their power to do so. And the song Suffering has 9 movements. And so the album I'm writing has a prelude and a postlude, and then it has each of those 9 movements, so 11 songs. And what I'm doing is I'm telling the story of a little bit of what suffering is as the song, but also a little bit of the story of one of the characters in the book, who's one of these master music teachers, and sort of how he came to his ability and some of the tragedy of his own past. So, you know, that's the conceit. I'm really excited about it. I just wish I had more time to work on it.
Now, your collaborator on it, are they playing all the instruments? Or are you having other musicians come in and play? How is that working?
In the composition phase, I'm doing a lot of the keys, and I'm doing some of the arrangement. He's doing his guitar and bass. He's doing some drum programming, which has come a long ways. When we actually track it finally, I have a good buddy who's a fantastic drummer that we'll bring into a real studio to do that.
Mm. You know, and I'll mention too, if there are other audio nerds out there, or musicians, something that I came across with drums, if, and you were saying how it's come a long way. because I listened to an album I did about 10 years ago, and I had drum programming on it, and I was like, "Ooh boy, that sounds dated." There is if you want to because for people who know anything about recording music, drums are like real drums are the thing that you can't, it's almost impossible to do in a home studio, because in order to do a full drum, you have to, as someone, the first time I was in a studio, the engineer mentioned this was 20 years ago now, you know, he was like, well, because the drums aren't one instrument, it is a collection of instruments that you're playing all at the same time. And so, you know, to mic a drum set, you need, you know, sometimes up to like 10 mics. You put a mic on the snare, you put a mic on the bass drum, you put overhead mics. And so, and the drums have to, besides the drummer being good, the drums have to be good and tuned well, and the room has to be good. And so there's so much that goes into recording drums that it's almost impossible to do at home. You really need to do it in a professional studio. That being said, a program that I use now, which I think is excellent for this, is a program called Easy Drummer. I think I picked it a year ago. It's EZ, the letters Easy Drummer. I think they're a company, I want to say they're based in Sweden or something. What they do that's great, the drum sounds are very good, but what they do is they get real drummers to record all sorts of different beats, and you can buy these sort of expansion packs for like $30 a pop. So you can have your singer songwriter pack, and you can have your rock pack, and your extreme metal pack, and your jazz. So where they get like an extreme metal drummer, like I think it's the guy from Meshuggah, who did that pack, and it's them playing on I think it's a set of Roland V drums that sort of records their performance as MIDI, and then you can use those and then sort of tailor it to your songs. And they have it set up in like, here's 10 versions of a verse for this style, and here's 10 versions of a chorus, you know, where they actually go to the ride cymbal and then they have all the fills. The fills are the hard, it's impossible to program realistic drum fills, but this is a set, and it's not cheap, and you need to use it within the context of like Logic or Pro Tools or something like that. I think it's like $150, but if you want more realistic drum sounds and you're like a singer songwriter or something, it's a good program to, even if you just use it for your demos, you know, just because you won't have the that'll just annoy you. You can get it much closer. And even then, if you get a real drummer like Peter's going to have, you can give him a better idea of what you want because it was actually played by a real drummer.
Well, John, it's funny. The reason I was chuckling evilly when you said, you know, going back to listen to your songs from 10 years ago, if you have been paying attention to this and other podcasts where I have been producer and I have put John's music in those podcasts, I tend to go for John's acoustic versions because of the drums. The drums is one of the things that always bothered me in those early recordings. So whenever I could get like your acoustic version of something, I would go for that in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah.
And put that in because I just liked it better. You know, it just felt better. Now I did have a question for Peter. I'm curious, when is 343 going to launch the Vault of Heaven role-playing game?
That would be fantastic. I'd be a gajillionaire. I don't know. Boy, I get asked this quite a bit because I work at Xbox. You know, if I have some sort of in for a game version, answer is no, I don't. I know, like, for instance, Brandon, as big as he is, he's got some game stuff, but it languishes, and it's through no fault of his own. It's just development and et cetera. So unfortunately there's no news there.
Well, I had another question for you. You were talking about the ability to export your playlists from your current system into newer systems. Do you struggle with that, having to use a Zune?
Yes. Zune from the past, and now Xbox Music. The interesting thing, you know, not to shill for the company, but we actually are the first to have had that triple play I was talking about, because we have a free streaming service, we have a paid subscription, and we have a download to own store. And our catalog size is as big as anybody's. But, you know, we have not, I think, done as well with marketing Xbox Music as others have their own services. So
I struggle with the idea of the one box. And I'm just saying, I'm not like playing on Xbox. I struggle with the idea of the one box home entertainment system. You know,
it's well, it's like, not about just the home though. Like well, it's the
yeah, I know.
Obviously, they've got clients everywhere. So I mean, you can play it on any device, even your iOS and Android.
And
so there's no excuses.
Yeah, you would think that since everything should be able to connect, that would be something that would take off, and it hasn't. You and I have talked about this before, Peter. I don't want to take my video game system online. You know, it's like for me, and I know that I'm an outlier here, but not necessarily within the writer community. I think that I probably fall in line pretty well with writers. When I play a video game, that's a singular thing for me. It's like I want to sit down and I want to play the video game, and I don't want to be distracted by other people, and it's just me playing the game. So this, I'm not giving Microsoft shit here. It's you know, Microsoft and PlayStation and even Nintendo to some degree have all come up with the online model, which is, you know, you have a monthly account or something, and you have some sort of login, and you're going online, and then once you go online, you have access to all this other stuff. I struggle with that. I really do. Cause that's not what I want out of my video game. I'm the kid that had the Nintendo Entertainment System. And before that, the Atari 2600, and it was invite your friends over to your house. Not everybody get online. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Those young whippersnappers.
I
get
know.
Them off my lawn.
I know. Shake my cane at them.
I love you, man.
Did you guys, I know it's a totally, another area to go now, but did you guys watch that that documentary on Netflix about Atari and the landfill?
Yes,
and
I did.
I just saw that last week. I thought it was really interesting. I would like them to get any deeper into the Atari history, because I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, but that was cool because it was, you know, the urban legend was that E.T. killed Atari.
Yeah. Yeah, it sort of disproves that too.
It did, yeah. That was a great documentary. I actually watched that, and what was cool for me is they were showing all the games that I still have in a box upstairs.
That's funny,
you know, because I still have a 2600 and it still works. If I can find a TV that I can actually plug it into, it still works. Now the controllers are another thing, because the controllers, the little rubber in there would degrade over time, and a lot of times, like the stick and the ball one, the controllers were the thing that went out on me. But the box itself still works.
Cool. All right. Before we go, I do want to ask Peter, you know, because he mentioned Queensryche, and I'm a big Queensryche fan as well. So I want to get Peter's opinion on if people follow Queensryche at all, which maybe not everybody in our audience does, but Jeff Tate, the singer of Queensryche, split from the band and now is doing, for a while there were two Queensryches, now there's just Queensryche, and I believe Jeff Tate is calling his band Operation Mindcrime now, I think.
That's right.
And I know you're a big Jeff Tate fan, and a big Queensryche fan, so what is your feeling on the two different groups out there now?
Well, it's kind of this. There's been a lot of bad ink spilled on Jeff Tate. And a lot of people consider him arrogant or whatever. And I don't know if any of that's true or not. There's certainly a lot of bad blood between him and the rest of the guys that are now Queensryche. What hasn't changed for me is how great a singer Jeff is.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Jeff very recently and saw him sing the entire Mindcrime album as well as he has ever sang it.
Mm-hmm.
And his voice for me is singular. There's there's not very many voices as good as his. So if you are one of those people who can divorce the art from the artist, again, if you decide to believe all this hateful stuff about Jeff, then great. If you can't, you know, then I actually think that's problematic, because then if you decide that because of their politics and because of personality and some of their own personal life choices, you're going to not consume their art, you really start delimiting what you're going to consume. And I frankly anymore don't want to know tons about the artist and their belief systems and all of that. I'm glad they have them, but I think they should keep them private. I don't think they should use their celebrity as a bully pulpit, and just let me enjoy their art. And so with the Queensryche guys, I'm not a huge fan of Todd LaTorre. I don't have anything against him. I just don't think as a singer, he rises anywhere near Jeff Tate. And frankly, the real songwriters in Queensryche were Chris DeGarmo and Jeff Tate. Mm-hmm. And some of the more recent Queensryche albums I haven't liked as much. But Jeff now, with his Operation Mindcrime band, is writing a triptych. He's writing mm-hmm. a three album story arc.
Mm-hmm. That's what I heard, yeah.
Really excited about that, because he was the brain behind Operation Mindcrime. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'll see how the music shapes up, but I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I always felt too, once DeGarmo left the band years and years ago, that's when I really noticed a pretty big quality dip. So I think it was pretty obvious that he had a lot to do with the songs. And, you know, so yeah, so I just wanted to get your take on that. Okay, we are out of time though. So once again, Peter's new book is Trial of Intentions. It is out now, and as Patrick let me know, it is out in ebook and audiobook now as well as the hardcover. And if you go to some airports in the United States, you may even be able to find a signed copy of it as well. Anything else you would like to let our listeners know, Peter, before we wrap it up?
Well, just that, you know, because I'm a musician, there's a lot of stuff in this book, that music magic, that is, I'm being told by readers they've never read before. So if you're a fantasy reader that loves original magic systems, that's something to look forward to in the book.
Awesome. Good. Okay. So I know you just did a book tour, but are you going to be going to any con appearances upcoming?
Yeah, I'm doing San Diego Comic-Con. I'm doing... maybe Gen Con, but there's a 90% chance I'll be coming to New York Comic Con, which is in your neck of the woods.
It is, yes.
So we may need to hook up.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So San Diego Comic Con and possibly New York Comic Con and possibly Gen Con. Very good.
You guys should meet up at the New York Comic Con and record a country album. just completely buck the system. Right, and all the expectations.
I say we do it. All right, Peter, website and Twitter that people can check you out at?
It's just my last name, Arulian.com, O-R-U-L-L-I-A-N. And it's my Twitter is Peter Arulian.
Very good. For me, you could just check out my website, johnanilio.com. I've been doing a lot of instrumental music lately. Hopefully I'll have a new piece up pretty soon. I had one out a couple weeks ago, and now I have a new one that's getting there. It's an instrumental, but it's in 7/8. So there you go. There's our progressive stuff. And there's a couple polyrhythms going on in there as well. So for you music nerds out there, it would be of interest to you. And you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. Patrick, what do you have going on?
Kirkus, ATFMB, SF Signal, mic drop.
Wow.
All right, there you go. All right, Peter, thank you for joining us. And everyone else, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Sunsmoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?